भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय On this 30th day of March, 2013, in Los Angeles, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Pallad pacifies the Lord with prayers. We are on text number 10. Viprad Vishad Gunayutad Adavinda Nabha Padadavinda Vimukhat Shopacham Varishtham Manye Tadapita Mano Vachanehi Tharta Pranam Punati Sokulam Natubhuri Manaha Viprad Vishadgun Yutara Davinda Nabha Pada Davinda Vimukhat Shopachambarishtham Manye Tararpita Manova Chanehi Tharta Pranam Punati Sakulam Natubhuri Manaha Viprad Vishadn Guna Yutara Ravinda Nabha Pada Ravinda Vimukhat Shapacham Varishtham Manye Tararpita Manova Chanehi Tartha Pranam Punati Sakulam Natubhuri Manaha Please chant. Vipradishadngana-yutara-davinda-nabha-parada-vinda-vimukacha-pacham-varishtam Nehitata Rampunati sukulam natuburi manaha Varishtam Manyetarapita manovachanehitarta Nato bodhimanaha Viprad vishadngana yutara ravinda nabha Pada davinda vimukhat shapachang varishtham Manye tarapita mano vachanehi tartha Pranam punati sukulam Ladies? Viprad vishadngana yutara ravinda nabha Pada davinda vimukhat shapacham varishtham Manye tararpita mano vachanehi tartha Pranam punati sukulam nato bodhimanaha Anyone else want to try to read that condensed font? Okay. Viprat Dana Brahman Vishat Guna Yutat qualified with 12 verminical qualities. And we have a footnote describing those. These are the 12 qualities of a perfect Brahman. Following religious principles, speaking truthfully, controlling the senses by undergoing austerities and penances, being free from jealousy, being intelligent, being tolerant, creating no enemies, performing yajna, giving charity, being steady, being well-versed in Vedic study, and observing vows. Okay. Adavinda Nabha. Lord Vishnu, who has a lotus growing from his navel. Pada Aravinda, to the lotus feet of the Lord. Vimukhat, not interested in devotional service. Shopacham, one born in a low family, or a dog eater. Vadishtam, more glorious. Manye, I consider. Tat Arpita, surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Manaha, his mind. Vachana, words. Ihita, every endeavor. Artha, wealth. Pranam, and life. Punati, purifies. Saha, he, the devotee. Kulam, his family. Na, not. To, but. Bhurimanaha, one who falsely thinks himself to be in a prestigious position. Translation. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called the Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmin, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmin, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. Please repeat. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmin, because the devotee can purify his whole family. Whereas the so-called Brahmin, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here is a statement by Prahlad Maharaj, one of the 12 authorities, regarding the distinction between a devotee and a Brahmin expert in karmakanda, or Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. There are 4 varnas and 4 ashrams, which divide human society. But the central principle is to become a first-class pure devotee. It is said in the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, Bhagavad Bhakti hi nasya jati shastram japastapaha apranasyaiva dehasya mandanam lokaranjanam. If one is born in a high family like that of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, but is not a devotee of the Lord, all his good qualifications as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya are null and void. Indeed, they are considered decorations of a dead body. In this verse, Prahlad Maharaj speaks of the Vipras, the learned Brahmins. The learned Brahmin is considered best among the divisions of Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. But a devotee born in a low Chandala family is better than such Brahmins. What to speak of the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and others? A devotee is better than anyone, for he is in the transcendental position on the Brahman platform. Mam chayo vivicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. This is Bhagavad Gita 14:26. The 12 qualities of a first-class Brahman, as stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, are as follows. And this is the verse corresponding to that footnote. Jnanam cha satyam cha damak shutam cha yamatsaryam ris tatikshana suya yagyas cha danam cha druti shamascha mahavrata dvadasa brahmanasya. The European and American devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement are sometimes accepted as Brahmins, but the so-called caste Brahmins are very much envious of them. In answer to such envy, Prahlad Maharaj says that one who has been born in a Brahmin family but is falsely proud of his prestigious position cannot even purify himself, what to speak of his family, whereas if a chandala, a low-born person, is a devotee and has fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord, he can purify his entire family. We have had actual experience of how Americans and Europeans, because of their full Krishna consciousness, have purified their whole families, so much so that a mother of a devotee, at the time of her death, inquired about Krishna with her last breath. The famous story. Therefore, it is theoretically true, and has been practically proven, that a devotee can give the best service to his family, his community, his society, and his nation. The foolish accuse a devotee of following the principle of escapism, but actually the fact is that a devotee is the right person to elevate his family. A devotee engages everything in the service of the Lord, and therefore he is always exalted. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is one of the famous prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, for those of you interested in memorizing. Prabhupada would quote this fairly often. So Prahlad here, in this is the third of the prayers, and there'll be one more. He's creating a little argument here, a little justification for how he can offer these prayers. If you recall, he began by saying, how can I offer prayers? I'm not qualified. You know, I'm born in a demonic family. I'm low birth. Then he made the statement, his opinion, and his opinion is worth considering since he's one of the Mahajans, that so many riches, aristocratic family, personal beauty, etc., cannot satisfy the Lord. He's only satisfied with pure devotion. And here he's describing the Brahmins. Maybe one will think, well, the Brahmin certainly is worthy of offering prayers to the Lord. But if you notice in these qualities, in the Sanjat Sujata, or Sanat Sujata, there's no mention here of pure devotion to Krishna. These are the qualities following religious principles. But there's all kinds of religious principles that have to do with karmakanda, simply worshipping Indra for elevation to heavenly planets and all these things. So that doesn't count. And the rest of them, speaking truthfully, controlling the senses, these are very good, but in and of themselves, they're not, they don't attract Krishna without devotional service. So he mentions all of those, and he says, but if he is not a devotee, a dog eater, you know, who's considered the lowest in society, but he becomes a devotee. Assumedly, he stops eating dogs at that point, but that's not so clear. But let's assume that he can purify his whole family. What to speak of himself? This purification process. This is one of the things that we as devotees should be aware of. Is that because sometimes we come with various, the hardest part of becoming a full-time devotee is often dealing with the family because they don't understand what's going on. As Prabhupada mentions here, escapism. Escapism means that you don't want to face reality. You don't, and another thing it means that you want to escape from your responsibilities to your family. We raised you, you know, and in our old age, you need to take care of us and you have so many obligations. What are you doing? You know, you're escaping from this. So, but Prabhupada makes the point, because this is how he is regarding escapism. Escapism has different meanings, but this is what it means in context. Is that no, if someone becomes a devotee and his family condemns him, just as Harinash Kashipu condemned Prahlad, He wasn't fulfilling his role as training up nicely to take over the kingdom and continue the glorious demonic line that Hiranyakashipu started. So he wasn't fulfilling that, and he felt he was his arch enemy. So sometimes even our own family members often reject us. They try to deprogram us, bring us back to reality, isn't it? That happened for some time. It doesn't happen so much anymore. But still, that's one of the most difficult aspects of dealing with, because it's, you know, as Prabhupada wrote in this famous essay, "Who is crazy?" You know, who is crazy? The origin of that was that one of the original devotees, famous devotee Brahmananda became a devotee. And he, you know, he had some material qualifications. He had a college education. I think he was working also in the welfare department. You know, he had a career going on. So he met Prabhupada and joined 1966, one of the first devotees, you know, one of the first 10 devotees. And then, so his mother thought that he, you know, this is a disaster for the family. Here he's all this education, and he joined, you know, this strange cult. And who is this Prabhupada? You know, so she sent Gargamuni down to save her brother. So Gargamuni comes down, he likes it, he joins too. So now what? You know, so now the mother is freaking out. So she comes down, and she was thinking that, you know, their sons have been taken in by this crazy cult. You know, what to do? So Prabhupada very skillfully pacified her. This is the one where he had them both bow down to the mother. He says, "What a glorious mother to have two sons who surrender to Krishna." You know, so he's praising. So she was a little pacified. Prabhupada was, you know, Prabhupada's a transcendental charm. But the point was that who is really crazy? So Prabhupada gave a lecture, you know, and that was made into an essay and also a BTG article. So it's like, you know, we've all heard of, if not seen the movie, maybe read the book, Alice in Wonderland, you know, Through the Looking Glass, where nothing makes sense on the other side. You know, you can say, speak words and you can create the meaning as you speak them. Jabberwocky, you know. I once memorized that I no longer forgot it. But there's, you know, nonsense speaking. Prabhupada would sometimes do that. You know, you remember where he would speak gibberish, you know, in imitation of the word jugglers. But the idea is that nothing is as it seems. Everything seems to be out of whack in the land of you know, the wonderland. It doesn't make sense. So that's the way they see this world. In other words, the reality, we know the reality is the spiritual world. And this is a reflection. And it's a perverted or distorted reflection. But nobody knows that. They're taking this to be reality. But really it's not substantial. There's this one verse that I may have mentioned this before. Forgive me but anyway, it's ever fresh. There's one verse that's repeated 5 times in the Bhagavatam. And whenever you see a verse repeated, you know, this is an important verse. You know, what to speak of 5 times. So what is that verse? It talks about this world as unreal. Arteya vidyamano pi sanksatir nanavartate. Vyayato vishayanasya swapne nartagamoyata. Which means, Kapila Dev mentions it, Krishna recites it twice in his Uddhava Gita, and it's there in the fourth canto as well, and once elsewhere with a slight variation. So what it means is that although this world is ultimately unreal in the sense that it's temporary, and it's certainly not what we think it is, okay, that's arte avidyamano pi. So this sanksuti means this world of birth and death, and everything that we're, you know, this ocean of birth and death. But the sanksuti, the pains of birth and death and the threefold miseries, they do not cease, in spite of the fact that it's dreamlike, they do not cease for one who is meditating on the object of the senses. The same phrase that Krishna uses in the Bhagavad Gita, dhyayato vishayam asya. Just as someone who's dreaming in a nightmare, say, those pains don't, the suffering in the nightmare does not cease until he wakes up. You see? He's in the middle of it. You may say, oh, that's just a dream. Yeah, but it's real for him. The person is sweating and sometimes screaming, and you experience it as very real in the dream. And then you wake up and say, oh, thank God it was just a nightmare. Right? And you come back to your, quote, real world. But Prabhupada made it clear in the Yoga System tapes again, no, that's just the night dream, and this is the daydream. It's still the dream. But we're taking this to be the reality, you see? The dream within the dream. So people take this to be the dream. This is sanity. And what we're, you know, the Krishna Leela and the material, the spiritual world and Mahavishnu and all of the amazing things that we take for granted because it's in the Shastra, it's true. They think it's just fantasy, you know, whatever. So Prabhupada wrote this essay, Who is Crazy? And he talked about the most basic principle of who are you? You know, who are we actually? So that's the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita. We're spirit souls. We're not the body. The body is vansangsi jirnana yata vihaya. It's just like a set of clothes. Right? Now, you know, the garment industry, we grew up in New York, there's this garment industry. It's huge. Now it's not so big in New York because it's easy to make the clothes anywhere. But anyway, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Why is that? If everybody just wore, you know, dhotis and kurtas and simple saris, it wouldn't be a multi-billion dollar industry. But because people are identifying with the body, therefore the covering of the body is so important because that's who you're presenting. You identify yourself with that. The fashion industry, it's insane. Yeah, to speak about decorating a dead body, this is exactly the verse here. You know, is very pertinent. So it's more or less a dead body, right? It's a construction. This is reality, if you think about it. It's just a big contraption, you know, that would just melt down into a puddle, a messy puddle, unless it had this structure of bones in it. Is it a bit, right? And all kinds of circulation of nasty substances that, you know, as soon as the skin breaks, oh my God, you know, people faint sometimes when they see their own blood, right? But that's reality. It's just, so what is it? That's the reality of what the body is. You know, sometimes there's so many statements in the Bhagavatam. What is the destination of this body? You know, what is the future? Okay, it'll be the stool of worms. Maybe it'll be ashes. Or it'll be, what's the third one? Earth. Yeah, dust. Is that soul attractive? Which one of those are really attractive? Is it? This is the nature of the body. The only reason why it's at all attractive or functional is because the soul is inside. That's who you really are. Just as you put on, you know, the Armani suit. Oh, I paid $4,000 for this suit. You know, and this poor guy's walking on, this homeless fellow's walking here with his rejected clothes, you know, doesn't, I'm much better than he is. But it's the same, you know, it's just some cloth, basically. You see the false prestige that comes with the suit. The same thing, false prestige that comes with the body. But it's just a dream. It's just a temporary covering that has a lowly destination. But we're identifying with it. Oh, I'm a 22-year-old male resident of Los Angeles. That's who I am. You see? And this poor person over here is 75 years old. You know, I'll never be like that. You know, I'm constitutionally young and handsome and wealthy. And this person is old. Well, tough luck. That's the way it goes. You don't see that's who you're going to be. You know, it doesn't register. This is illusion. This is the spell of Maya. So Prabhupada, you know, who is crazy? Everyone else is crazy. The Hare Krishnas are sane. We're trying to become sane and get out of the craziness. No, you're not the body. You're spirit soul. What is the nature of the spirit soul? Spirit soul is eternal. What is the function of the spirit soul? The spirit soul is part and parcel of the supreme soul. And that supreme soul is a person. That's the big one. And it's not that spirit is just, as, you know, consciousness in general. Spirit means consciousness. Consciousness means a person with senses, with activities, with a name, with a form, with an abode, with friends and everything. Just as we have here. But this is never, never land. It's never, you know, this is wonderland we're in. It's an illusory land. It's a dream world, you know. And therefore, we shouldn't be absorbed in it. The whole idea is that when the mind becomes absorbed in this world, then you're in the land of insanity. It's craziness. And at the time of death, or as death approaches, and everything is being taken away, all of your props, so to speak, or your fallible soldiers, you know, they're being taken away because it's all in relation to the body. The body is going. Then there's unlimited anxiety because suddenly your whole investment, you lost your whole investment. You've invested what Prahlad says here, your mind, your words, your activities, your wealth, and your life. You invested it all in a false identity, you know, in the money, in the family relationships, in the body itself, in prestige, name, fame, whatever you want to talk about. You've invested that, and that investment is being lost. And you're completely bereft. You don't know what your destination is. And so, you know, as you form the consciousness in that material, then you're going to come back again to exactly get your just desserts, good or bad. That's sankstati. That's the difficulties of material life. So who is crazy? The person who is investing in Krishna consciousness, investing our mind, our words, our activities, our wealth, in trying to wake up from the dream and come out to reality, which is completely blissful, eternal, full of knowledge. That's reality. You have to have faith in that. Or the person who is fully absorbed in this madhouse of the material world, where everybody's walking around with a false identity. It's like you know, if you go to the place where they keep people like that, people have all these crazy ideas. Even we have our own, people have crazy ideas. Oh, you know, I'm Skanda. And we had somebody like that. I won't name any names. I have to reveal the truth. I'm Skanda, you know, or, you know, whatever. No, you're not Skanda. You're just a humble servant of Krishna. That's our actual reality. Jivera Sotopoy Krishnera Nityadas. Lord Chaitanya spoke to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami, he represents the perfect disciple. As he approached Lord Chaitanya, who am I? Why am I suffering? If I don't understand the answer to these questions, what is the good of my so-called learning? He was saying, I was recognized as a great scholar, as an aristocrat within the government of Nawab Hussein Shah. People praise me as such, but I'm seeing, you know, he was always perfect devotee, just in that circumstance. But he's taking the role. But I'm seeing that I don't know who I am, so what is the use of that? It's just decorations on a dead body. You know, he's saying that. So the answer is, who is crazy? Anyone who identifies with the body is crazy. Illusioned, in a more polite sense, in deep illusion. So our effort is to wake up from that illusion. And it's so long-lasting, so many lifetimes we've been cultivating it, that it's not easy. It's very, very firmly fixed. And so we need an all-encompassing process. That's why Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, it's not a sometimes thing. It's not a once a week or even once a day, you know, or five times a day offering prayers. No. It's moment to moment. It's a complete overhaul of our conception of who we are and our activities. Everything. The whole life has to be changed. That's why if you get serious, you get initiated, you get a new name, you look different, you act different, you think differently, you wake up from the nightmare, really, of material life. So let's go through some of these purport and see some of the points Prabhupada makes. First he talks about this Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya. I referred to that. This is a verse similar to the one that Prahlad is saying, is that if your good birth, jati, your study of the shastra, your chanting of mantra, your austerities, jati shastram japastava, is devoid of any devotional service, then apanaseha deyasa mandanam is like the decoration on a corpse. You know? Now, they don't do that in India, right? They burn. Burn the corpse. Prabhupada said, what's the point? He's in New York. If you go to New York, there's like square miles of cemetery. People have been dying there for a long time. Literally millions of people are underground. Prabhupada said, why do they waste all this land? You know, they're not so foolish in India. They burn the body and cultivate the land. Makes sense. But in the process of the funeral, you know, the wake, and you decorate the body, you have to have the... what do they call it? Mortician, so that they don't decay right away. But it's really foolish. You know, it's silliness to glorify the dead body somehow. This is the person. Oh, I want to see him one more time. Well, you never saw him any time. Yeah, I just want to see my husband one more time. Yeah. You know, but you never saw it. Prabhupada says, we never really see each other. You see the external body. You don't see the soul. So, but then the loka ranjanam, this is an interesting point. It's for the pleasure of loka, means foolish people, you know, to decorate the dead body and the wake and all this business, you know. So the idea is that all of these qualifications without bhakti may be very pleasing to you or others who are fools, but they're not worth anything. It isn't worth anything. So don't be fooled by, you know, somebody who knows a lot of the Vedas. If there's no bhakti there, it doesn't help. And then he speaks of the vipras. So the learned Brahmas. Now, Prabhupada make it very clear that the essential quality of miracle culture is bhakti. Just like in that list of knowledge, right? Brahmas supposed to be full of knowledge. That's one of the things. They're full of knowledge. And one of their main professions is teaching. Brahmins teach. And ideally, they don't even teach for a salary. They get donations. You know, they live on donations of their students. But what is real knowledge? Krishna makes it clear in the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, verses 8 to 12. You know, first of all, it's so amazing. Here's knowledge, but the first part has nothing to do with knowing anything. It has to do with your character. Amanatvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, chantar, arjivam. What does that have to do with, you know, studying for the SAT? Nothing. You see? So he says, amanatvam. First thing is humility. You have to be humble. And so that you can approach the preceptor, you know, this person of knowledge, and they'll they'll open up their heart and their mind and give you knowledge. If you're in a challenging mood, then they clam up. You know, this happens. So, amanatvam, adambitvam. Adamba, Prabhupada translates as pride. Another important meaning is free from deceitfulness of hypocrisy. Yes, dumba. And you know, dumba is the first quality of the demons. Dumbo, darpo, abhimanascha. There's abhimana. So this is amana. You see, just the opposite. Amanatvam, adambitvam, humble, honest, and straightforward. Anhingsa, non-violent. Prabhupada makes it clear in the purport, non-violent means positively trying to help those who are suffering. You know, there's a proactive element to it. It doesn't just mean not hurting anyone. It means helping those who are hurting. Anyway, he goes on like this. And within those qualities, one of which is always seeing the evils of birth, old age, disease, and death, and so forth, is one-pointed, unflinching devotion to me, Krishna says. Without that, says Prabhupada, all the other qualities don't mean much. It's a decoration on a dead body, you see. So that's the point of this verse. If someone who has been eating dogs or cows, like many of us were, but somehow or other takes to Krishna consciousness and dedicates his mind, words, activities, wealth, and life to Krishna, then all of the evils of the previous lifetime are erased. This is only Krishna can do this. Only Krishna can completely erase and eradicate all our karmic reactions. There's no other way to do it. This is the point of the first part of the sixth canto. Maharaj Pariksit was very concerned, being a very soft-hearted Vaishnava. He's sitting there, right? This may be his day 4 or 5. It's already the fifth canto. And he's hearing the Bhagavatam, and he hears this description of hell, of people who suffered grievous pains in hellish planets for various sins at the end of the fifth canto. So naturally, the first question is, how can people be relieved of this so they don't have to suffer? And Shukadeva Goswami tests him a little bit. And he says, well, I have to atone for those sins. If you atone for the sins through some austerity or process, you know, of atonement, of the process, then you don't have to suffer. But Maharaj Pariksit says, well, that doesn't seem such a very good idea, because you may atone for the sins, perform some austerity, but you still have the desire to perform the sin. That's one of the results of sinning. You see? It plants the seed of doing it again. Just like the drug addicts. You know, most society realizes it's not good, you know, to be addicted to heroin, say. That's a very, you know, dangerous thing to become addicted to heroin. It's not good. You know. So how does that happen? Well, you don't start out addicted to heroin unless you really have bad karma and your mother was a heroin addict or something. But assumingly you don't start out that way. You take that first hit because, not because you want to become a heroin addict, because you want to enjoy something, right? And you're in a bad association. So you take the hit and, this is great, right? It must be. I've never tried it, thank God. But Krishna protected me. I tried Hare Krishna and never looked back. That was it's a much better drug. No bad side effects, but just a progressive more and more blissfulness. So you take it, and then you get a high, but of course you come down, and then what happens? Well, you've planted the seed, right, of taking it again and again and again and again. And this is the a perfect example of sinful activity. Because no one performs sinful activity just to perform sinful activity. There's some benefit, so-called benefit, some pleasure, something that you get. But you've planted it again, you see. And so even if you realize, oh my God, what have I done? I committed that sin. I have to atone for it. If you're not performing devotional service, but you're performing some austerity or fasting or whatever you may do, you know, that doesn't eliminate the desire for it. The little seeds are still there. And even if you then he gives another one, the cultivation of knowledge. You know, you can get rid of sinful reactions. But that also leaves the residue. That doesn't get deep enough. Only by devotional service, centered on the chanting of the holy name, that's the whole point of the Ajamil pastime, can you be completely free. Because Krishna, he takes the role. He purifies you. And what is that? Karmani niradhati kintu jabakti bhajam. You recognize that line? That's from the Brahma Samhita, where he says, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. From Indra down to the little germ called Indra Gopa, everybody is bound up by their karmic reactions. So-called good or so-called bad, you know. But they're still bound up. But karmani niradhati kintu jabakti bhajam, those who are performing the pure devotional service to Krishna, the bhakti bhajam, Krishna, he burns to ashes all the karma. Karmani nirdhati. Nirdhati means totally burned to ashes. That means that you lose the desire for it. Don't you experience that? Anyone who's chanting seriously and practicing devotional service, you know, my own example, you know, I grew up in an ordinary Western environment, and meat eating was just part of the whole scene. You didn't even think that it was bad. It was good. Let's go to McDonald's. I remember when McDonald's started in the early 60s. Oh, yeah, McDonald's. Oh, those French fries. Wow, you know. You know, that was it. But then, you know, I became a vegetarian, you know, joined Hare Krishna. And then it's not just that you prefer vegetarians because it's healthier, or even that it's because, you know, it's more ethical or whatever. But it's all part of the philosophy. It's central. You know, you couldn't dream about it. And even I, believe it or not, I live across from McDonald's now. I live across from like my apartment is right across the street from McDonald's. Luckily, I'm on the west side of the street, and all the sea breezes from the ocean are blowing, so I don't have to smell the horrible smell it so much. But still, there I am. But I can honestly say, I haven't been tempted even one time to go in there and, you know, it's gone, totally gone. It's just abominable to even think about it, isn't it? So these are activities that I, as a soul, performed in this body at one point. But Krishna, he took that desire away. And all the other, you know, four sinful activities, he takes them away. He takes it all away. Which is the real, you know, the real blessing is pure, you know, prema bhakti, ananda. But that's an important, you know, it's an extremely important blessing that Krishna gives. It's only available in bhakti. Only in devotional service. So that's why this dog eater is more exalted. He's not a dog eater anymore. He's a pure devotee. And he's dedicated everything, and therefore he can purify not only himself, but his whole family. Because they have a relation to him. They're thinking about him. Right? They may think that he's a fool because he's joined the Hare Krishnas, but still they're thinking about him because there's a tie there. Right? and those who have already passed away, right, from Prahlad, great devotees, even the previous generation. Well, how does that work? Because they're already gone. Aren't they already, you know, following the path of their karma? Yeah, but they're being thought about by Prahlad, you see? And therefore, in the Sringadeva is blessing them. Just like the pastime, more recently, with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma's son-in-law. What was his name? Amoga. So Amoga was married to Sarvabhauma's daughter. And he was a great offender, right? Lord Chaitanya, Sarvabhauma, you know, he was a great devotee, you know, and he wanted to cook for Lord Chaitanya, so they would invite him, he and his wife, and she was a great cook, of course, and he would love to, you know, and Amoga would come in and say, look, he's eating too much, just see that, and Sarvabhauma would go nuts, and he would chase after him, but he's a little elderly, couldn't catch him, you know, says, and his wife would say, I hope my daughter becomes a widow. That's what they were saying, you know. So Lord Chaitanya, he's laughing, you know, he says, oh, he shouldn't, you know, he's a relative, you know. So because he's related, you know, to Moga, he got so much mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya went to him, was he already like suffering some disease, right? Was it leprosy or whatever? Cholera? And so Lord Chaitanya said, I forget what he said to him, but he eventually embraced him, you know, and he became a great devotee. You know, he surrendered everything, started chanting and crying and, you know, the standard of symptoms. So all because of the relationship. And that wasn't even a blood relationship. What to speak of, you know, your family, you know. They think of you, you know, and as they get older, the Hare Krishnas. My own mother, she was a pious soul. She was, you know, within the realm of, you know, what you can do in ordinary material life in this world. But she was always thinking of others' welfare, and she's you know, took care of my father for years, even though she was elderly. You know, she's taking care of him as he passed away, and then she lived like 20 years after that. She died at 97, and at the end, you know, I was able to visit her about a week before she left her body, and my brother went off, and I was with her, and we had some hospice people coming in once or twice a day. And so I told my mother, I said, Mom, it's time for japa. And she was like, at that point, you know, very submissive. She just, the fact that I was just there, you know, was like, okay, whatever you want to do, you know. So, you know, she couldn't understand the whole mantra. It was too much, a little dementia, you know. But so it was like, Hare Krishna. And then she said, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna. We chanted for like 10 minutes like that. And then I just played Prabhupada tapes all day, you know, she's listening. You know, so that, you know, she was a pious lady, and she subscribed to BTG and like that, you know. So just my being a devotee, not that I'm a pure devotee or anything, but just my being a devotee helped her so much because there's a relationship there. What to speak of a great devotee, you know, who's able to purify the whole family. So then Prabhupada makes clear, let's see, talks to the Brahmins. And Prabhupada quotes 14:26, famous verse, Mamchiova Bicharena, that this is how one can actually become a Brahmin. Now, what's the definition of a Brahmin? You know, there's this famous verse, Janmana Jayate Shudra. Everybody's born a Shudra. But Samskarat Bhave Dvija. By Samskaras, purificatory processes, like Garbhadhan Samskar and others, one becomes twice born, Dvija. But not learned yet. Vedapata Bhave Vipra. By studying the Vedas, one becomes learned. But if you want to be a Brahman, brahmajanatiti brahmanaha, then you have to know Brahman, and we know that Supreme Brahman is Krishna. So the point is that devotees are meant to be brahminical. In other words, devotional service includes these brahminical qualities. But the most important of those qualities is to be a devotee of Krishna. So here he says, by serving Krishna, without falling down, unfailing, vyabhicharena, not avyabhicharena, but vyabhicharena, one transcends the modes of nature and comes to the Brahman platform, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, where real Brahminical culture is. And then he quotes the 12 qualities verse, and then he has this little pastime about, you know, again, defending the Brahminical nature of his disciples. If they're following strictly, and, you know, they're perfectly qualified Brahmins. And those who deride, you know, the Vaishnavs, so that's not a real Vaishnav, this is American, so-called American Vaishnav, you know, or Chinese Vaishnav. Then that person, according to Padma Purana, is living in hell. Archivishnau Shiladir, Gurusundanabhati, Vaishnava Jati Buddhir, Yasiva Nadakisa. So one who sees the deity as made of stone or wood, it's just a stone statue you worship. Who sees the guru, qualified guru, as an ordinary human being, or who sees a Vaishnav as according to birth, Jati Buddhir. There's others too. Sees the holy name is just an ordinary sound. The water that washes the feet of the Vaishnavas of the deity is ordinary water, you know, or just Vishnu, one of the gods. All of these, this mentality means the person's already living in hell. Nataka. Nataka means a resident of hell. So we shouldn't see each other in that way either. And we should see that, okay, it's just a set of clothes. Is this the external body? What is the quality, the character of the person, and the quality of the devotion? You know, that's how we should see each other. And we're all, you know, anyone who's chanting at all should be respected. You know, this is instruction of Rupa Goswami. So that's the real qualification. And all of this is in the context of Prahlad justifying the fact that he's going to offer these prayers. You know, he's not taking it for granted. Here's the Supreme Personality of God before me. Am I really worthy of being here? You know, how can I offer prayers? So we can also think like that. You know, who am I to be sitting here chanting japa and sitting before the deity of the Lord? Such a low birth. I'm not qualified. But Krishna can empower us, you know, by the mercy of the pure devotee, we can become qualified. So somehow or other, despite my disqualifications, let me chant Hare Krishna and offer my prayers. You know, that's the proper mood. Remember, he starts out, you know, with the humility. That's the first meaning here. So Prahlad is an acharya in all ways. He's a Mahajan. Mahajan oyena gata sapanta. If we want to be successful, follow in those footsteps of the Mahajans. Prahlad is showing us, not just teaching us the philosophy here, but showing us the attitude and the mood of a great devotee and a great preacher, actually. You know, and so this is a great example for us. So I will read this translation once more. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the brahminical qualifications, as stated in the Sannat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmin because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmin, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. Questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada. Yes, it is. You know, I forget the details of that one. I mean, there's also the other one where the person was asked to chant, and Hare Krishna says, "Oh, I can't chant so many words," and then passed away. You know, like it was, you know, in other words, I can say I can't chant that name of your God, you know, but in the meanwhile, the person had plenty of time to chant Hare Krishna. So that's the flip side, you know, but I frankly don't know the details of this. If anyone, any of the old timers, can remember what the background is, this that. Who is it? Who is it? Who? Okay. Oh, is it Krishna here now? Who is it? Kartikeya's mother, Kartikeya, one of the early devotees. I think it was in England. Yeah, so it was a real experience. The Prabhupada chose to put it in his immortal purports here as an encouragement to us to try to engage our parents. You know, we used to be that they didn't get a call for like 6 years. And have you heard of Jack Smith? Well, I don't know who that is. What you know is devotee name? No, I mean he's my son. You know, like that. But you know, so write letters and stay in touch, and in this way benefit our family. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have the mic. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Right. So the question simply was about this story that Prabhupada referred to in the purport of a mother of a devotee at the time of her death inquired about Krishna with a last breath. And Archita Babu recalled that more details. Kartikeya's mother, She was an early devotee. She was, is your Krishna here now? You know? And which is perfect, you know? And it's a great blessing. Yes?
Sanat Sanata, Sanat Suyata, is mentioned in the Mahabharata. Is one of the rishi that Vidura called him to advise Dhritarashtra about death.
Uh-huh.
So is the same who wrote this Sanat Suyata?
I have no idea. I mean, I thought is one of the four Kumaras.
Yeah, I think it's related to Sanat Kumaras, but I don't know.
Prabhu, I have no idea. I have no idea. This is apparently the only place this book is referred to. But editorially, I would say, why put it in a footnote? Why not just put the translation here after Prabhupada quotes the verse? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Kareem Babu, do we got that mic? Yeah, bring it up. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. This is a question about the relationship between devotees and karma.
Speak up a little bit. Even.
This is a question about the relationship between devotees and karma.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying that karma is nullified. So I was thinking about in Mahabharata, Bhishma Deva, who is a Mahajan, they start that story saying that he was one of the eight Vasus and he committed some thing, but he was then forced to enter the life of Bhishma Deva, his spirit, you know, who was entered as Bhishma Deva, and he had to pay off his karma. So I'm wondering.
I'll repeat it.
Huh?
Go ahead, keep going. That's starting this now. I can hear you. Just keep going.
So he had to pay his karma. He committed some offense, you know, he had to pay off his karma, and he was a Mahajan.
Right.
You know, so how is his karma nullified if he has to, pay
often,
some sort of debt?
Okay, so the question was, he gave the example of Bhishma Dev in the Mahabharata, who, despite being a Mahajan, had to suffer some karmic reactions, apparently, right? So oftentimes, you find in the lives of these great souls, in our the Shastra, that by the plea of karma, you know, in other words, he has a tremendous role to play in Krishna Lila, right? The whole, you know, on the battlefield and so many things. And so Krishna moves them around on the basis of that karma so that they'll be in the right place at the right time. You see? So it seems he's not suffering the kind of karma in the same way that we are. You know? In other words, an ordinary person who doesn't have any assets in devotional service is completely bound up by his karma and is controlled in that way. But on the basis of an apparent curse or something like that, you know, then the person takes a role like he took that vow, right? That's another thing. That's why he's known as Bhishma. You know, it's a horrible, frightful vow. What's that vow? Celibacy for all time. You know. Well, okay. But that was important that he took that vow. You know, the way that things all worked out with the descendants and everything, right? That he didn't have any son and everything. So it seems like ordinary karma, but it's really Krishna moving the actors out in his lila. You know, so therefore it's not the same thing. Even the great souls, you know, in more modern times, they seem to be suffering their karma, but they're not suffering in the same way. And that's why we have this verse, Tateno Kampam Susamikshamano, that the great devotees are praying, and they seem to be undergoing some reverses. You know, in Prabhupada's preaching Leela, you know, so much, if you had simply come along in like 1964 or 63, you see, oh, this is an Indian gentleman. He's very sincere, and he tried in so many ways to succeed and fulfill this, the order of a spiritual master. But he was failed at every step, right? That whole thing with the League of Devotees and the house he lost, you know, and all that. So it was a failure. I mean, obviously, he can't do anything now at the age of 69. I mean, it's finished now, right? In other words, if you came in at that point, you see, it was just not in the stars. Krishna didn't want it to happen. It was his karma, you know, that he wasn't able to do that. Lost all the money and everything. You didn't see. But this was Krishna's plan, you know. This was, you see, oh, overall, okay, this brought Prabhupada to America, you know, and so many things. And it serves as an example for all time. How, don't give up, don't give up. Keep striving, striving. Krishna will eventually, you know, make you successful. So sometimes what looks like karma is not really karma. Even though it says that, you know, that it's actually just Krishna Leela in the way it's working out. That he's on the other side in the battle, you know, that seems to be negative. But ultimately it all works out perfectly in the end. Yes? And we're going to... That's what I said. It seems to be karma, but it's not really. Yeah.
So it was not a karmic reaction at all. What had happened was that the eight Vasus were together, and one of the wives had asked them to steal the cow of the yogi Vasishta. Okay. So when Vasishta, of course, was very advanced, and when he saw that his what is that cow?
Surabhi.
Yeah, Surabhi cow was stolen, and it was stolen because one of the ladies wanted to send it down to her friend to give her a longer life. So anyway, Vasishta discovered this, and when he discovered it, the first thing that he called them all, and he said, this was a very offensive thing that you have done. You didn't even come to me. You just did what you wanted to do. So this is, and you should know better. You are Vasus. You are demigods. You should have a higher understanding of reality and morality, how to treat a sage. He didn't call himself a sage, but he said, how to treat a person who's elevated. So what I do is I curse you. I curse all eight of you. So what happened is that they got scared, and I curse you to go down to the earth, and you'll live on the earth, and you will suffer the trials and tribulations and problems and miseries of all those persons on the earth. So all of the Vasus, they became very, very upset and very disturbed, and they begged him, they pleaded with him, could you please ease up on the curse so that we don't have to stay there too long? So he said, well, all right, if you can find someone who can kill you, in one day, then you can just stay there one day and go and come back again. And of course, the person who was going to kill them was Mother Ganga. And Mother Ganga, when she had her babies, she threw them into the Ganges River, and they came back and they went back up. But one of the eight Vasus, whose name was Dyu, who became Bhishma Dev later on, what happened was that when he asked for the curse to be mollified, he said, no, you're the one who did the stealing. You're the one who did the real trouble, so you will have to stay for a longer time. Therefore, I curse you to stay on earth for a very, very long time. Uh-huh. So that's exactly in other words, he was cursed to be there. Now, even if you're a Mahajan, doesn't mean that you're not subject to the curse of a great holy man. However, a great Mahajan can nullify a curse if he so wants, but nonetheless, knowing the fact that he did wrong and he should suffer the consequences, merely accepted it and went down to the earth planet and became Bhishma Dev.